Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you this week?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm good. It's always exciting when we merge. I'm excited to get into all that went down with that. We had a double episode this week. There's a lot to be getting to. I'm really excited to dive into it.
You say it's always exciting when we merge, but this week they did as much as they could to disprove that theory. But we'll get there in due course, I'm sure.
Well, what I mean just to clarify, I think like it's always exciting. I spent all week like amped up for this week of Survivor, no matter how it's going to go down, just because the merge is in a vacuum. Obviously, there are going to be examples of merge votes, and this is a good one of them, that are not particularly interesting. But just the idea that this big group is coming together and the individual game is starting is, I think, a really big turning point within the game, and always a really fun time in the season.
Yeah, always fun to look forward to. And then even if it isn't that fulfilling, we have something to complain about. So that's always good.
Yeah.
But let's dive into this, because we have one episode, two episodes. What's the official ruling on this?
This is two episodes. I believe it even got two separate episode titles, but I'm definitely not sure about that. And I might be getting that backwards. Like maybe that was something that even caused more confusion. But I am definitely firmly of the camp that this is going to be two separate episodes. I don't know if we have any Survivor DST kind of ruling on that, but I think everyone is on the same page there.
I believe Rob has said officially that the second half of this week was episode 9. So that's what we're going with. And apologies to anyone who is getting left behind by that. But either way, we have twice as much Survivor to talk about, and we didn't have twice as much time to talk about it. Our audience did not have twice as much patience. So I think we should get right into this now. And we start with a little bit of a follow-up on the Zeke and Vanna situation from last week, which we devoted the bulk of our discussion last week to, and we had a guest, Seth, in to talk about that. And if you haven't listened to that for whatever reason, then Seth was fantastic. I mean, he offered his own personal perspective on that, one which we cannot offer based on our situation, and he crushed it, frankly. Like the response that we got from that was overwhelming. So thank you to everyone who wrote in and said how much they appreciated both the podcast and what Seth had to offer to it. And I think if you did miss that, it's worth going back and listening to that, because I think that issue is one which goes beyond just the usual 1 week half-life of a Survivor episode, and I think his perspective is one which is always going to be useful to learn from.
Yeah, I'm honestly, first of all, big thank you to Seth from me as well. That was a fantastic time getting to talk to him, and I'm sure a lot of people, I am sure, because we got a lot of people saying, hey, this is a great podcast, and that like maybe the most like overwhelming response as far as people writing to us saying, hey, this was great, that like we've ever had. And I think that is all because of Seth. I definitely felt like that's one of the most enlightening podcasts I've ever been lucky enough to be a part of. Like, I honestly, Seth was so great, and you were on such fire with your questions that very soon into that podcast, I was just saying to myself, just don't mess this up.
Well, yeah, that I think easily the most feedback we've ever had for an episode, and it's always fun, because I always love doing this every week with you and talking to people about the episode every week, but it's always fun when we get to do something, whether it's an interview or something else, that kind of goes beyond the usual boundaries of that, and I think that definitely qualifies. So but yeah, without tooting our own horn too much, that was a lot of fun to do, and we get a bit of follow-up on that situation here, and it's mostly more of Sarah Lucina talking about how great she is for not feeling prejudiced towards Zeke, to put it not too charitably.
Yeah, I think this Zeke and Varner thing, we do see them bring this back up. Of course, that's going to happen after it was such a big event. The previous episode, we get to see Zeke talk about how Survivor has been something that continues to help him grow as a person, and how he's ready to get back at the task at hand of winning the game, which I thought, yeah, as I was watching this, saying to myself, hey, this is more great stuff from Zeke. Not by the end of the night, I would say a great episode for Zeke, but certainly a good start, at least for now.
Well, I feel in a way it was almost a perfect episode for Zeke, because there was not much to laugh about the situation last week. The one thing that I did I did wonder about, though, was so coming into that episode, the Survivor internet fan base was very down on Zeke. You would go on Reddit any week, there were so many posts saying Zeke's a tryhard, I don't know why he's on this season, he's such a bad player, and so on. And then we have this incident last week, and then suddenly the entire tenor of everything is just this outpouring of love and support for Zeke. And I was wondering, when we get back to business as usual next week, and let's say Zeke does something which the fan base doesn't like, what's the reaction going to be? Like, is it going to be this permanent new change in that, or is it just going to be back to what we had before? And it turns out it is exactly back to what we had before. And the entire hive mind consensus seems to be Zeke is an idiot, Zeke is a bad player again, and I think this fits perfectly with what he was saying last week. Like, he doesn't want to be treated in any special way because he is a trans survivor player. He just wants to be Zeke the survivor player, and you know, the Reddit, such as they are, has decided that Zeke the survivor player is not something that they like very much, and therefore they've they're heaping their opprobrium on him again. So it's almost the exact response he could ask for.
Yeah, that's a great point. And job well done, I guess, by Reddit, treating him like they would, I guess, treat most other people in this circumstance. But yeah, I think this has been hopefully something that we can kind of move past as a community, and I think that will probably happen now as we get more into the individual stuff. But you mentioned Sarah Lucina, and I thought this was interesting. She definitely got to get her two cents in here, and you mentioned, and I agree, that this is some pretty heroic stuff about, once again, pointing out, you know, I've never known a transgender person before, but, you know, I wake up this morning and Zeke is still just Zeke to me. And I think we'll probably, now that we're starting to get to see more of everyone and more of who's going to be the major strategic players now that we are merged, and for instance, we're finally getting to see some of Ciri now that she has to start going to some votes, we probably will start talking a little more about just the edit in general. But I will also flag up, the merge episode last season is exactly where they completely threw at least me and you two, I'm going to lump you in as well, off of Adam as the eventual winner for the entirety of the season. So take all of this edit talk for what it is, which is merely speculation that at least this time last season was hysterically off base.
Yeah. On the topic of Sarah quickly, do you buy, and so for my part, I think that her reaction was sincere, but she did come in for some criticism last week for making it about herself almost, and or it seemed like she was overcompensating for something, and or that it was in some way performative. But were you on that side of things as well, or what?
Well, I definitely see what that kind of, like, I understand what people are saying when they suggest that might be the angle that she is seeing this from, but for me, it's always, what do they want us to be taking away from this? And to me, it feels at least like they want the audience to be coming away from it feeling like Sarah, you know, giving her the benefit of the doubt and saying, oh, she's growing as a person just because of all these events going on around her, and I should like her and root for her as a result. So that would be at least my take on that situation right now. And then the only other thing that I had as far as this whole Zeke thing is, and we kind of hit on it a little bit, is how weird it would have been if this had gone even worse for Zeke, and like one week he has the whole thing go down with Varner, and then the very next week he ends up getting eliminated. I thought that would have been certainly something that I thought was in play for a long time as I was watching this episode, and I kept thinking about just how weird that would be to go, you know, just the tone of the podcast shifting directly back to back.
Right. Zeke potentially playing himself out of the game in a week to come, but for now, he's avoided that fate. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And the other thing that just kind of along those lines, and potentially more on this later, I also think it would be really weird if they had this whole thing with Varner to build up to with Zeke, and then also had the conflicting idea that he was potentially a losing finalist, which I think is something that could be in play based on how much we're seeing Zeke, his story and where he stands within the game and what he wants to do, but also how potentially unreceptive people are to that, at least at certain points in these episodes.
By now, I think we've put forward almost everybody both left in the game and also people who have already been eliminated as possible losing finalists. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that. But if Zeke does lose in the final somehow, how would you even begin to start editing that? I think you almost have to go into it with no agenda and just say, okay, we're going to show everything as faithful to the truth and what happened as we possibly can. And if that leads to some mismatched perception or this idea that Zeke didn't deserve to lose or that he was robbed or something, then we just have to live with that, because there's no way that we can possibly edit around everything that's happened.
Yeah, I think certainly it would be a tricky spot, but I think they have done themselves a pretty big favor, and I think they've done the show a huge favor in recent seasons in giving us really compelling losing finalists. So I think they would be in a much easier position than they would have been a couple years ago, where it seemed like they really had to beat us over the head with why every losing finalist eventually goes on to lose, whereas these days it seems like they've been giving us a lot more reason to believe in the people who end up losing in the finals, like Ken last season, like Spencer, certainly like Aubrey, in just these last three seasons alone.
Yeah, and I think in the spirit of what Zeke would want, I think you can show him as someone who plays the game hard, maybe makes some wrong decisions or alienates people down the road, and ends up losing because of it. And that would be an entirely compelling and sensible narrative for a losing finalist, which also happens to have this one episode where he does transcend the game and have this very kind of life-involving moment, if you like.
Yeah, and I also think there's just so much time left for them to transform Zeke into the more conventional losing finalist that we could go on to see.
If they want to bury Zeke, there is more than enough time left to do that, as we've learned.
Yeah, all right. So before we get into the specifics of this merge, Dom, I have a fun merge trivia question for you and also for the listeners at home. They can play along as well. I don't know how long I'll let the clock run on this one, but let's see if you can come up with the answer of what was the merge tribe name last season? Millennials versus Gen X. What was the merge tribe name?
Oh, God.
Clock's ticking now. I may add in the Jeopardy music, but I may decide that's too much work when I'm editing this podcast.
And there's not enough time for me to Google it and pretend to be doing something else either. I don't even know the actual tribe name for that season, like not Millennials or Gen X, just... Oh, God.
No, I had to go to Wikipedia to look the answer up, and I saw one of the original tribe names, and I thought that was the merged tribe name. It confused me at first. Like, that's how poor my memory is of this season.
I'm tapping out. There's no chance of me getting this.
Don't
prolong the agony for me.
Right. I could have had an hour, and I would not have come up with Vanaka. Shout out to everyone.
Yes, of course.
And # I beat Dom if you came up with the answer. So... all right, let's move into the merge now, and we get the players arriving on the beach. Jeff is there to greet them. He is very open right away. Hey, here's the merge feast. You guys all must be pumped. However, a twist is coming into play, Dom, where each of these two tribes is going to have to pick a volunteer to not get to take part in this merge feast. I don't know if they had alternatives, if there were no volunteers, but we end up quickly seeing Brad Culpepper here volunteer for the red team. We get # what would Monica do yet again. He says it's a no-brainer for him. This is, you know, Monica would have wanted him to do this. This is him taking one for the team. What did you make of this? Because Brad has obviously been probably, I'm going to call it, the protagonist of the season, and that does not change these two episodes.
Well, my thought was that Brad is a hero and everything he does is perfect and guided by a larger moral sensibility. But the only person to really question that here for the first time, I think, in the entire season is Zeke, who calls out this effort by Brad to rebrand himself. And it's not even negative. It's not even Zeke attacking Brad. It's more acknowledging that Brad is consciously trying to improve his own image after he was labeled as like this aggressive guy, this misogynist, and so on in his first season. And this is, I think, other than Debbie being Debbie, and that's we're meant to write that off, I think, this is the first treatment of Brad which isn't wholly entirely positive. So what does that signify to you?
Well, to go back to it, this time last season at the merge, what I was saying is, you know, entering this episode, we had been saying Ken and Adam are the only candidates. We get to the merge and everyone's trashing Adam. Like, we get a group shot of people saying he's a terrible ally. They literally call him an asshole and have people agree with that. These potentially future jurors in there. I would say now that we're finally in the merge episode, seeing people besmirching Brad's character a little bit, if that's even what he's doing. Like, I'm with you. I don't think that's Zeke's even going that hard at Brad. I think he's just saying maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. But at least I don't want to get burned twice. So I'm going to be a little less eager to jump on this as overly bad for Brad. I would say that this is okay. He can definitely get through this.
Well, I think there's a massive difference between someone being buried by the edit and by all of their peers repeatedly over and over again and being shown that and emphasized versus someone getting this angelic edit for the first 7 episodes, 8 episodes, I don't care. And then we get this one tiny thing which maybe could besmirch it. It isn't even that bad, as you say. It's just Zeke pointing out an obvious fact.
Yeah.
Does this feel like a Brad coronation edit to you?
It certainly does, but this brings me back to, I flagged up that we got, once again, # what would Monica do, and it seems to me like that is not going to be, you know, we saw it in the premiere. I don't think we've seen it. We may have seen it one other time in between now and then, but this definitely seems like we're being set up for like a recurring thing. This is not going to be the last we see of what would Monica do, and I have to go back to Monica lost in the finals, and when we're talking about compelling losing finalist edits, I think that's at least in play. Like, I have learned my lesson, I hope at least, enough from Ken to feel, and Adam last season too, of course, to feel like maybe there is some other timeline other than a Brad obvious win.
And the answer to what would Monica do is be the overwhelming Edric favorite until the merge, to the point where they literally did not have other candidates on the list sometimes. And then as soon as they reached the merge, her edit just tanked, dropped through the floor, and didn't recover from there. So maybe Brad is on the same trajectory. And if he is, that would be really fascinating, because to go from his portrayal up until this point to a plausible losing finalist, he would have to take a real heel turn. And I'm excited to see what that could possibly look like. However, in a season which is old school in many ways, where it does seem to be going back to this very like traditional mode of gameplay, maybe we're going back to old school editing patterns too, and it's going to be a lot more straightforward than the kind of craziness that we've been seeing in recent seasons.
Yeah. I just feel like if he was going to take that heel turn, that I think I agree with you would probably be necessary for him to wind up as the losing finalist. Would they really be setting us up this hard for it? Like, I really feel like most of the casual viewing audience would probably say Brad is among their favorite players to be, you know, now that Ozzy is out, beloved Ozzy is out of the game. I think a lot of that kind of viewership is now going to shift their attention towards Brad Culpepper.
Yeah, but Brad feels like the one person who can't be a losing finalist. But prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
Well, that's the thing. I just feel like on the heels of Spencer, Aubrey, and Ken getting such huge pre-merges and continuing for a long way into the post-merge, I am definitely not ruling out that Brad is a losing finalist by any stretch. Yeah. So I guess let's get into over on the blue team. It is a bit of a tougher decision about who's going to be sitting out here of this merge feast until Ty eventually gives in. Story checks out, I would say. I think Ty would have probably been the front runner to be the one who says, you know what, if no one else is that willing to even consider doing it, I will take one for the team. I feel like in this spot, Dom, and I'm guessing you were also on board, I would be holding out until the very last possible second where it seems to me like there is no incentive realistically in raising your hand. Like, how much goodwill are you really generating as far like whose vote is honestly going to be impacted at any point by this? When, like, I think you just have to hold out for Jeff to say, this is it, speak now or the feast is gone for all of you.
Well, I would just give up because I wouldn't like the food anyway, but I understand that for most people, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And if you're on Ty's tribe, you know for sure that Ty's going to volunteer, and it's only a matter of time until either he does it willingly and enthusiastically, or he does it at the last moment because he feels so guilty about the idea of everyone going without food. So, yeah, you can just stand there and wait for Ty to do that.
I felt like there was a pretty strong food theme over the course of this episode, which obviously culminates in Ozzy getting voted out and saying, enjoy eating, like enjoy having any kind of way of nourishing yourselves. I feel like we're at least in, it's possible that there could be some kind of like food related storyline. I really feel like we were hit over the head that hard about the food this week.
You think now that Ozzy's gone, they're going to go through some kind of famine and no one's going to be able to eat anymore?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading way too much into this. I just really felt like that was like a heavy theme this week for some reason.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if this whole like survival aspect that we saw kind of pop up randomly in the pre-merge resurfaces again somehow. But yeah, not to jump ahead, but I did love that Ozzy was so stuck in that mindset still after 10 years of, if I'm the provider, they can't vote me out because why would they? And they're like, he so badly wants to be on like Stranded, right? He wants to be on an actual survival show where these skills do come into play, as opposed to this whole like voting malarkey, which yeah, he still hasn't wrapped his head around after four seasons out there now.
Right. It is amazing that he's literally spent more time playing Survivor than anyone else on planet Earth and is still back in, as far as I can tell, the exact same state of mind, more or less, that he was in maybe day 15 of his Ozzy, actually on Cook Islands. It took a long time for Ozzy to become like a likable character and player within the game. He was on the outs pretty early after the whole Billy Garcia thing, after that swap. He was then in a pretty rough position and was kind of a dick. Like the last time I watched Cook Islands, I feel like I remember Ozzy being kind of like over Survivor, like by the time they got to the merge. And then they, you know, the I-24 went on that crazy run to overtake whatever the other tribe was called. What was the other tribe called?
Raro,
thank you. And that, I think that, I was thinking the other day about just how crazy all of the alternate timelines are for Ozzy, where like either they don't overcome those numbers, or he gets that vote and beats Yule and then doesn't come back for Fans versus Favorites, and like where do we go from there? I think it's crazy, but potentially more on that later, and potentially more on the food later as we talk more as more of that comes up. But let's get into this merge, and quickly we get to hear from Sierra Dawn Thomas, who of course is going to flag up her legacy advantage is potentially coming into play this round, and it's just so we don't forget to bring it up later. How likely would you have to feel like the votes might be coming on you for you to use this legacy advantage at 13, where it's probably not going to make that big of a difference, versus at 6, where it could swing everything?
I think even if you have some suspicion it's coming on you, you have to be pretty sure, because if it's the kind of thing we always come back to with the idols, where like if the vote's coming on you one time, it's probably going to come on you again. And if this is a one-shot thing, then you need to think that using it now is going to turn the table somehow to get you out of that situation. And based on the way the post-merges the past few seasons have been, that's a perfectly fine thing to assume. So I guess there is an argument, like, just guarantee that safety, give yourself another few days to feel things out, and then regroup and go from there. But if you can make it to 6, the advantage of just being safe that one round is so large that I would really want to hold it if I had the option.
Right, that's what it comes down to for me, is it's just so we saw last season with Ken, it didn't make a difference really at all, because he was just such a great Survivor player, Dom, that everyone had no choice but to believe in him as the lock winner the whole time. But for me, at least, a big consideration would be, if I felt like it was probably not going to make much of a difference, I would not want my whole alliance knowing from like day 20 or whatever that I was not straightforward with them about that. Like, if I was to play it, I would probably tell people that I was about to play it before I, or at least tell my alliance that I was about to play it before I did, just so they wouldn't think, how could she not tell me? Like, how close is she really if she didn't end up telling me something that it seems like there would be no downside in telling me? Whereas at Final 6, I think that is a much more forgivable thing. Like, once we're at that point, we're probably already down to mostly people that are in our tight group of allies. I think that kind of selfishness may be the wrong word, but I think that's a lot more understandable for people. More on Sierra Dawn Thomas, I'm sure, as we talk more through this episode, because she definitely emerged as a bigger character.
I was thinking the other day, assuming this works the same way that Ken's did, where it's like an idol. You play it after the votes are cast, but before they're read. I was thinking, if the legacy advantage becomes this established feature of the game over the next few seasons, let's say you're at the final 6, you win immunity. Could you like bluff having the legacy advantage by like giving your immunity away and then thinking, well, surely they can't vote for me now because this is like, why would they do that unless they have some other form of immunity?
I definitely like what you're thinking there, and specifically like the idea of bluffing it. But I think the more interesting like talking point in general is, now people starting with season 35 are going to have seen that the legacy advantage could be out there and would probably think of specifically the final 6 as the place that it would have to be played. And that would at least be my assumption. And certainly if I was about to go out for Survivor 36, now seeing that be the case both of the first two times that the legacy advantage has been in play, I think just specifically the final 6 tribal council could become a really interesting spot, and potentially, like you're getting at, a really interesting spot to be bluffing things like that, if they are just putting in these unknown advantages that no one in the game can verify exist or don't exist. That is really, really interesting.
Right, because if you have a potential legacy advantage, you maybe have an extra vote in there somewhere or some other kind of advantage, and then also you have the normal idols that are in play, that vote suddenly becomes very, very messy, almost regardless of anything else that's going on.
Yeah. Definitely. I think we saw, obviously, the final 6 at Cambodia get sloppy to the point that Jeff Probst had to come out with the chalkboard. I think that may definitely not be the last time that ends up happening. And I think they, I guess it would have to happen in the finale for us to be able to get a segment of Jeff explaining it. But I guess the final 6 will often be at the finale from these days. It seems these days. So I definitely think things like that are definitely in play going forward. The more kind of, as Steven and Denise have been describing it, the more of the Calvin ball game we start seeing, where they're really just throwing as much as they can at the wall.
Yeah, I feel like I already need a chalkboard to keep track of who's been on which tribe so far through two swaps. Any kind of chalkboard moment, I'm fully on board with. Let's get into the actual like events that we see in this episode, though, because the first thing that we really hear is Michaela is flagged up as an early target. We hear that Michaela's reputation precedes her, which doesn't make sense because no one knows who she is. She can't have a reputation.
All they know is she hasn't made the merge before.
Right, that's literally all they know. And this feeds into this larger point that people have been making, because it seemed like Sierra latched onto Michaela as his target very quickly, despite not having spent that much time with her. And I know there was some discussion about, well, it seemed like JT was reacting this way towards Michaela too. I think Malcolm called her out in one of his ex-interviews as being quite abrasive and tough to live with. So it seemed like there's this running theme of people are turned away from Michaela. At the same time, it feels like people are very quick to judge her as well. And we saw this with Sierra and other people too. And I know that Michaela was, I don't want to say actively subtweeting, but it certainly felt that way, talking about how like microaggressions play a role in the game of Survivor. So what's your entirely informed and woke and PC take on this?
Yeah, well, I think Michaela is right. Like, I saw the tweet that you're talking about. And in a related note, I saw on Reddit last week that this is the first time ever Sari and Michaela are the first pair of black women that have ever made the merge in the same season. To me, that is, I feel bad that I've never noticed that before, but that is not a mark against like black women on Survivor as far as I'm concerned. Like, that is hugely embarrassing for casting. That is unfathomable to me that they could go 34 seasons like that. I can't get over how ridiculous that statistic is. But I definitely think there's something to that. And like, we talked a lot about this actually last season, with all of the women of color getting voted off early. But I definitely think that's something that the Survivor community really needs to address more often.
It feels like if the demographic balance was anywhere near what it should be, then just by going through that many iterations, at some point this would have happened before. Right. And it's shocking that 34 seasons in, like, this is the first time that we get to see that.
Right, there have been many seasons where it was not possible to happen because they didn't put multiple black women on the same season.
Right. And we see this theme developing through the episode of Sari becoming like this mentor to Michaela almost, which was great to see as a Sari fan who loves any Sari content, but just specifically for what that scene represented. And it seemed like Michaela, for the first time across both seasons now, was really finding her place. And my take, and I'm curious what you think, is that this feels very much like Michaela is going to outlast Sari, but kind of like inherit that mantle from her and try and take that as far as she can.
I think that would be in line with my take. I know that ever since the season 33 reunion show and Jeff Probst doing everything he could to get Michaela back on camera as often as possible, I have felt like she has been a pretty big favorite to go very deep in the season. I initially was thinking it might be because she was going to win, and then I changed that to Michaela is going to be the next Kelly Wentworth, who goes on a big challenge run and comes up just short, but is like the new fan favorite. I am definitely sticking with the challenge run. I think that is, we are almost certainly, maybe not almost certainly, but I think that is a very likely possibility, is that she's winning a lot of these late immunities. But my new theory is Michaela, the losing finalist. I'm really trying to cover all my bases here, Dom. Any spot she goes out in the finale. But I think you laid out a great case for it. I really could see Michaela in there as a losing finalist.
Oh, wait, when did I lay out a case for this?
Just that I think she is being poised to be set up to inherit the wisdom of Sari and be in there as a big major player in the end game. But I think we're also seeing just plenty about why people aren't responding that well to her, or why they might have like whatever predispositions that would make them not want to respond that well to her. I think a lot of things could be pointing to Michaela being a future losing finalist, and I would probably be calling at this point a no vote receiving losing finalist.
Hold on, I don't recall saying this at all. If I did, I strongly disagree with that past version of myself. I feel like, along with Brad, Michaela's one of those people who is unlikely to be losing finalists, because it's my take is she's going to make this deep run, probably win some challenges at some point. Like, Aussie is gone now, so the biggest competition is gone. And by the looks of things, that this all-consuming Brad alliance is poised to take over the game. There aren't that many great challenge competitors in there, and let's say Andrea gets picked off, that's some competition gone. Aubrey can get picked off, and so on. So a lot of the people who could stand to challenge her or get in the way might be gone before her. So I think that's certainly in the cards. However, I think she's going to get cut down before she makes it there, and in the process, she's going to be made to look like this underdog who is the last hope of any kind of surprising outcome. And that's going to paper over a lot of the maybe the more abrasive qualities and so on that we see alluded to vaguely, like Sari says, you've got to rein the stuff in, but it's never really shown on screen to the same degree.
maybe I'm just advancing her several more rounds than I should be mentally, because I really am sold on her winning several individual immunity challenges this season. I think we've seen so many small things about, first of all, how good she is in the challenges, and secondly, about how much she just loves to win. I would be definitely taking, like, I would take the over on 1.5 individual immunity necklaces for Mikaela this season. Where do you stand on that?
I think I would take the over too. She's going to have some big role to play, that's for sure. And so this episode, when we heard 8 minutes in that Mikaela was being set up as the boot, I thought, okay, I would put my life savings against Mikaela getting voted out this episode. So surely she's going to win immunity. And then even when she didn't win immunity, I thought, there's no way it's going to be Mikaela. Unless it is so overwhelmingly obvious out there in real time that there's just nothing else they can possibly come up with. There's no possible way, right?
Yeah, well, I just want to go back to the big note. The thing that I want noted is, mark the timestamp where Dom said, I do not think Mikaela could be a losing finalist. I really think that is probably, I think that is her most likely outcome at this point.
For easy reference later. Yeah, but so let's say next week it's like Mikaela versus Ceree, let's say. I'm not going to be feeling good about Ceree. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was in the same camp where when we got set up, and thankfully for us, because we have a lot to talk about, and this first vote was not interesting at all, so it should be pretty quick, where we very quickly see the whole team, hey, Brad wants Mikaela to be gone, so it's definitely gonna be Mikaela. We get the now kind of like classic Survivor editing technique of Survivor telephone, where the plan goes from one person to the next and they're showing the next person and then they tell the rest of the group. We see more of that later when Zeke's spot gets blown up within like 10 minutes when he's trying to turn on Andrea. When it became clear that the boot was between Mikaela or Haley and nothing else was really in play, with, you know, another half hour before Tribal Council, this overtook JT's exit as the most inevitable, like, 20 minutes of the season for me. That it had to be.
Yeah, I would have taken more enjoyment in that if it had been anyone except Haley, like, if it had been someone more momentous in a way, but Haley just felt so... It felt like we were robbed of a good merge episode. And if this had been the only episode of Survivor that we got for the week, it would have felt like such a damn squib, such a letdown. Instead, we got to ignore that because we got our fix immediately afterwards again.
This is an interesting question that you always ask me, and I never know how to answer it ahead of time because I can't think of good examples from previous seasons on the fly when it's been like however many months afterwards. But I think you always ask, like, do they edit these knowing that these are going to be aired together, because I really wonder if we would have gotten a different edit to that merge episode if they'd known that this is going to be the only episode people get for a week. They're not going to get that immediate gratification. I think there may have been more suspense, the same way I think with Sierra Easton in the season premiere.
I think it really does depend though on just what happened out there. Like if it was going to be always Mikaela or Haley, and that's the big fulcrum of the vote, then you can't really dress over that. You can't make that look more exciting than it is.
Right, especially like we have 13 people go into this merge vote, and 11 of them are essentially in on the plan. There's no real way to dress that up.
And we'll get into possible reasons for that in a second, but it did feel very like RC-esque, where it was always going to be her, and the only question is who is the other like decoy vote, and then turns out Ceree turned it into not a decoy vote anymore, but again, more on that in a bit.
Well, let's get more in on that, I think, quickly right now, which is just Ceree turning that around, because we got that game of telephone where Brad decides that it's got to be Mikaela, and then everyone else is on board within, you know, 30 seconds later of episode time, but Ceree says, hold on a minute, hold the phone, hold the Survivor telephone. I don't know if I want it to be Mikaela. I think she could be a useful number for me. I think Haley makes a lot more sense. And she is very quickly, you know, she gets Zeke on board, and then everyone else seems to be on board, and we ultimately see it go that way, where it really does look like so far it's Ceree 1 and Brad nothing, at that point at least. You know, obviously, the second episode notwithstanding. But to that point, as far as watching the episode, I thought that was really impressive stuff.
My problem with all of this is, so Ceree bursts on the scene edit-wise, has a fantastic episode, really comes across very well on screen, and also gets away in the vote. And I still came away thinking that was a bad episode for Ceree. I think her chances are worse now than they were coming in. And that suggests that something went badly wrong somewhere.
I disagree with that.
Well, I could be completely wrong, of course. But to me, it felt like, okay, she gets away, but is this the thing that was worth, like... So... her card's on the table now. She's made her move. She's shown that she can influence the vote and that her group is going to be her group versus Brad's group, and this is the opening salvo in that war. Was it worth it just to get Haley out over Michaela? Like, it felt like you could have aimed a lot higher if that's what you were going
to
do.
Well, maybe the, you know, the way that the editors chose to tell the story of the merge is to deliberately show, hey, Brad wanted it to go one way, but Ciri was pretty quickly able to change that. And I would say now that Ciri, like, she went the entire pre-merge without going to a tribal council, the original Nuku stuff, when it wasn't about Brad Culpepper, it seemed to me like it was about Ciri. I still don't feel like we've heard virtually anyone say anything negative about Ciri the person. We've certainly heard plenty about how great Ciri is as a player and why people might want to vote her out. But I feel like now that Ciri is finally going to some of these votes, and we're finally getting to see her, and I think what we are seeing, as I would obviously expect from Ciri, is fantastic stuff. Now, the problem is, the more we see of Ciri, like, I spent this entire 2 hours terrified, thinking, of course this is going to somehow turn on Ciri. We're seeing way too much of Ciri. She's never going to survive this.
So here is my big, grand, unified theory of the season, and I'm curious what you think about this, okay?
I can't wait.
So, great. So most of the time, I feel like we see about 70% of the truth of what's going on, and so usually it's okay, this alliance is in charge and this person's close with this person, and we have like a rough idea of what the hierarchy is. And often though, there's some crucial detail that's missing, and so we base all our analysis on this idea of what's going on, and we miss out this thing, which it, like, when we interview people after the fact or we read these exit interviews, that's a missing piece that makes everything else kind of make sense. It's like, oh, that move which we thought was bad, maybe that was good instead. This season, we're under no illusions that we know anything, really. Like, we have a vague idea that there's this Brad and Sierra thing going on. But on original Nuku, let's say, and I keep coming back to the Bion comparison, but I feel like it's really fitting. We just don't know anything about what happened over there. The only person from that original Nuku tribe that's gone is our boy, Juicy Thick, peace be upon him, who made his unceremonious exit from the game far before his time. But everyone else from that tribe is still in the game still. And the only people from the original Mana are Aubrey, Michaela, Troy, and Haley. So from that Nuku tribe, those original alliances, despite the two swaps and everything else that's gone on, those are still just intact because everyone is still there. So it might be possible that, like, Ciri has something going on with Brad and Sierra, let's say, from the original Nuku tribe, and she doesn't want to break that up automatically just yet. She wants to see what the status of that is, if that can still be rekindled. We saw, like, Sarah talking to, like, Debbie and so on, and it feels like Sarah's about to flip back now. So it seems like that original Nuku group is still holding pretty strong. Zeke in his secret scene this week said it's old Nuku versus old Mana, and I have no use for these old Mana people, so we're just going to pick them off and then rework things from there. So it does feel like Haley is a vote which everyone can agree on, because no one has, like, all of the Nuku people, no one has any use for her. And then from the original Mana people, they'll just go with whatever keeps them in the game at this stage. And if that's Haley, then so be it. So Haley is the one vote which, in this, like, initial feeling out period, everyone can reach this consensus on. The same kind of thing with Bion and Cass, where, like, this big Bion group has all these factions within it, but all of them can come against Cass. Same thing with at the Philippines merge, like, everyone was against RC, like, her own tribe and all the other, and the other two tribes as well. So maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe that is that one vote which you can't start the war just yet because you don't know who your actual enemies are, but then it becomes clear pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, well, that's where I was going to go, is I feel like the best example that we've seen of that all season about how we may see, I would say at best, like 70% of the truth about what is actually going on, is the way that Zeke seemed to really abruptly want to turn on Ciri and Andrea. It doesn't, at least watching the episode twice, it really doesn't make a ton of sense to me, and I have to imagine that a big piece of that must be rooted in something that went on initially. Like, I feel like if he had a better vibe from them, from the original Nuku tribe, we would have heard about it, especially if he's giving secret scenes about how he wants to just be Nuku strong.
Yeah, and if there was some secret deal between Zeke and Sierra on day two, that might be the key to the whole season, right? And we just don't have any idea about it. Same kind of thing with, like, Andy told us he had this thing with Gina Marie from day two that never made the feeds in BB15, and that informed his decisions the whole way through, including up until the end game, but no one had any clue the whole time.
Yeah, Yeah. And I mean, it goes back to like we've always talked about like how great it would be to have Survivor live feeds, even given that probably like 85% of the time it would be super boring, just them lying around right. miserable, not doing anything.
The thing is though, what works against my big theory is that it felt like at this stage, even before the Haley vote happened, they were already planning ahead to it's our faction against Brad and Sierra. And if you know that's going to be the case, if this is what you're planning for, why not just make that move now before they can strike back at you? Because it seemed like Ceri had this confessional where she said, if there are two options and it's Michaela or Haley, then why not Haley? But surely there's a third option, which is none of the above. I'm going to bring them both in. Because it felt like Haley's not going back to Brad. Haley is right for the taking. You can take in Haley, take in Michaela at the same time, and that's two extra votes. And now you have, if you have Aubrey as well, then that's seven. That's the majority. That's all you need.
Well, I think it may be a case where all of these people, because of those original Nuku bonds, potentially feel like playing down to a Nuku endgame is going to be good for them. And obviously they can't all be right. Only one of them can be right about that. But I could definitely see that playing a role here where they view Haley and Michaela and potentially like Troyzan could fit this or Aubrey could fit this later of these aren't people that I'm sure are with me or against me. And it's going to be easier. Like we always talk about it. You'd much rather have a thin majority. Like you'd much rather be up 5-4 than be up 5-2. It's a lot easier for other people in your alliance to get greedy when you're up 5-2. And I could see the Haleys of the world being viewed as, okay, this is an easy boot now. I'll stay safe for the time being. And if not now, I could easily see Haley staying around for a long time and people not being willing to vote her out later. So let's just do this and maintain like a thin majority.
But equally, it's a lot better to have a majority at all than to not have a majority. Sure. And I think that's the risk that they're taking here. Because we saw like on the very next vote, well, Ozzy gets blindsided. Zeke throws his own alliance into disarray and has to flip to the other side. And now what do Andrew and Ceri really have to work with anymore? Like it's going to be very hard for them to form any kind of resistance. And that's what worries me. So it may be that there's some missing ingredient here that I'm not aware of yet, but it does feel like in 3 weeks' time, when we're looking at Brad and Sierra and Debbie in the final three and wondering what went wrong, this is going to stand out as the missed opportunity, perhaps.
I mean, it definitely could. And I'm having a hard time telling if Zeke and Ceri and potentially Andrea would fit this if we got to see a little more of her. If they are trying to stick together, but seemingly not like trust each other completely because they think the game is going to open back up more later on, or because they think it's going to play down to a point that they can finally stack each other up as the big threats in the end game.
And that's why Brad having that experience of tribal is so important, I think, because that group of Brad and Sierra and Debbie and Ty, despite all these internal arguments, despite Ty going haywire and despite Debbie blowing up on Brad, that group is battle tested now. They've stuck together through a few votes and they know how to work with each other. Whereas it felt like Ceri maybe was overplaying her hand too soon, and then who knows what's going on with Zeke and Andrew anymore. And it really feels like that group of Brad and the rest, it's just so, they're not better players in the abstract maybe, but in terms of just executing on the basic principles of Survivor, they're doing that better than anyone else at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is definitely worth flagging up that I think they just in there know that they have a lot less to be worried about as far as a past reputation coming back to haunt them this season. Like, I think in Aubrey's position, where she, you know, she doesn't have these, you know, original Nuku bonds with anyone. She's kind of swapped very fortunate times where she's never really had much control over what's going on. I definitely get why she would be happy to just go along with whatever is keeping her safe for the time being and hope that the game opens up later. But I really do wonder what like the Zeke and Ceri of the world are thinking as far as how they want the dynamics to change in the future, like if they are hoping that the alliances can shift around or not, because it really seems like the Brad group has no interest in that.
Yeah, we see Aubrey saying that she is on Team Ceri, and as a member of Team Aubrey, by the transitive property, we are therefore on Team Ceri, and we can't escape that. And then Zeke also lumps her in with Ceri and Andrea when he's talking to Sierra. And then finally, there's a really kind of revealing little snippet where Ceri, I don't know who else she was talking to, but she's listing off the core votes in their group with Aubrey like present in the conversation. And she goes, okay, it's Ceri and Ozzy and Sarah and Andrea. Oh, and with Aubrey, that's five. And that, like, in some other context, that's like a Jervis telling Sierra she's fourth level mistake, but it's like, Aubrey knows what the deal is. Serene knows if she knows. And it's like, right. they're not bullshitting each other. They know what's going on.
There's value in that. There's value in Aubrey's not stupid enough to think that you're going to have her in like your core three as soon as you want to get her on your side.
But the thing is, I don't think Haley is that stupid as you put it, but I think Haley is like, if you show her loyalty.
I did not put it that way. I did not call Haley stupid.
I'm not saying you did, but I think Haley's someone who, if you show her that loyalty and you're just willing to play the game with her in a way that no one has been except Sandra, maybe, and she's long gone now, then it feels like that's someone who, like, that loyalty will be a valuable currency going ahead. And same thing with Michaela. And if for someone like Ceri, who no one is taking Ceri to the end, even the people that she's working with right now have no intention of going to the end with Ceri, like, Michaela might legitimately go to the end with Ceri, and maybe Haley would as well. And that's it. I feel like you can't let people like that go.
Yeah. Well, to quickly go back to Aubrey, it really seemed to me like, yeah, they were talking, the Ceri group was talking very openly about their plans with Aubrey right there. But Aubrey gave the confessional about being in the middle and like on one side I have this going on and on the other side I have this going on. And that's exactly where I'd want to see Aubrey's head at. Whatever people are willing to tell her is great, but when you're in Aubrey's position here, now is not the time to be putting your foot down about pretty much anything as far as I'm concerned. Just keep letting it roll through. Whatever yeah. is going on, we need the game to change drastically. There are probably going to be some idols played, some potentially like weird twists coming into play later on. There's plenty of game left here for someone in Aubrey's position. Like you want to, I think losing Haley is great for Aubrey, like she reducing the number of kind of free agents out there, so her vote is more valuable.
Yeah, it's just really depressing how little agency she seems to have in this season. It's just she gets a front row seat to what's going on, but she doesn't get to participate in what's going on. She's just there watching as a fan, I suppose.
Yeah, it must be. I'm sure it's endlessly frustrating for Aubrey to keep having things go sideways for her.
Yeah, and I worry now that when you if Brad does take control and you have this six-person group just moving ahead, they are not going to have any use for Aubrey, and they know what she's capable of, so she's going to be one of the early targets on their hit list. And I worry that she's just going to go in like the third or fourth juror position, having not had a chance to really play the game as she sees it in any meaningful capacity.
Well, that's what I'm kind of saying, is I feel like Aubrey goes in there knowing, the same way I think Steven said, like, he went in there knowing anytime he was away from camp, he knew the perception would be he's off looking for the idol, whereas that's not the case for Joey Amazing. I think Aubrey goes in there knowing anytime I'm having a private conversation with anyone, I'm probably going to be viewed as strategizing, whereas Brad, I think, can go in there knowing, like, hey, these people know that I'm going to come in and probably be the leader for as long as I'm here, but they may not take me as seriously as they, not nearly as seriously, certainly, as someone like Aubrey, I would imagine, at least. So I think just keeping her, you know, her nose down, keeping her name out of, even she's still even picking up votes here, by the way, randomly.
Right. They tell Zeke that Aubrey is the target to like throw Zeke's vote away, I guess, and it's apparently believable enough that he goes along with it, so there we go.
Well, it seemed to me like Zeke kind of knew his goose was cooked. It seemed like that whole group knew that this was not going, probably not going their way.
It was cooked, but then it was like uncooked at the same time. It was kind of like cooked in advance, because I think Zeke, even though he's joined that side now, I think they don't have any use for Zeke long term, and they know how kind of shifty he can be. But he also can't really flip back, because now Andrea's mad at him. He's shown that he's willing to betray them once. So Zeke is kind of caught in the middle, and I think it's only a matter of time until he gets picked off as well.
Right. That's why I think things just look so good for Brad and Sierra and friends when the potential like opposition to that group is targeting each other. That's definitely not a great sign, I would say. They all of them voted for Zeke, and Zeke voted for Aubrey.
Yeah, and so it seems like Sarah has joined that group now, and if that's the case, it's just a lock and there's nothing they can really do. But even if Sarah's vote was up for grabs, they would need every vote outside of that group to all come together. So like Zeke would have to make nice with Andrea again, and they would have to learn to trust Zeke, and you know, Michaela would have to be willing to go along with it, and Aubrey, and so on. And you would need all of those people to vote together and make this work for them to win the vote, versus only one of those people has to defect and join this more solid alliance for them to take control.
Right. And especially when Debbie is the one ringleading this, at least as it seemed, like this quick change around to vote on Ozzy, and she's the one who knows, even if all of that does happen, I have this extra vote that I'm going to play.
And by the way, that site has three idols. And it's like, and not just that, it's they're in the hands of people who would not be the obvious target. So let's say they somehow get one over on Brad and Brad leaves the game. Well, now Troy and Ty can regroup, and between them, they have more than enough tools to like flip the vote back in their favor. So I maybe this is just a cynic in me, but I don't see the way out. I think this is as close to, I don't want to say the season's over already, but it feels like the end is nigh. We can kind of see what's coming along here.
Right. This is like my one concern about advising that Aubrey just kind of lay as deep in the shadows as she possibly can, is it really seems like the theme of the season is essentially, first they came for Tony and I said nothing, and then they came for Malcolm and JT yes. and I said nothing, and then they came for Sandra and Ozzy and I said nothing. How much longer can Aubrey realistically expect to last here if she doesn't keep some of these like Saree and Andrea type three-timers that have big reputations, Saree a four-timer that has big reputations at least in the game as theoretical targets that are bigger than her?
Yeah, I broke with a tradition to complain on Twitter for the first time by saying it felt like it's just going to be the B team picking off my favorites. It's going to be in some order, like Andrea, Saree, Aubrey, Zeke, and it's I can imagine, like, let's say they get wind that Ty has two idols or that Troy has an idol, they could take a vote out to try and go after one of them. But it feels like the next five votes, let's say, the four of them are probably going home in some order, right?
Well, I definitely wouldn't say it's like a lock that we get essentially a pagonging here, but I think it is more likely than it has been in a long time that we get a pretty straightforward season.
But the issue is, I think a pagonging would be the smart move for that group, right? Like, why would you keep those people around who you know can upend things, you know can like can win challenges in some cases, or who would win jury votes if they made it to the end in other cases? Like, there's just no benefit to keeping them around. And that's why, if you want to talk about Sarah quickly, because she I think is a player who's really coming into her own and has a lot of decisions to make here. We see her going into next episode, she has flipped to join that side. She voted for Ozzy after seemingly being aligned with Ozzy, being aligned with that, the rest of that group.
Excuse and me, I think it's because
Ozzy I think it's because she realizes that instead of going up against like Saree in a social game, going up against Aubrey in a strategic game, going up against Andrea in challenges, I can go up against Debbie and I can go up against Sierra. Like, which of these sides is going to be easier for me to beat, right?
Right. Well, I think, I meant to bring this up earlier as we were talking about just the idea of reputation playing a role in the season for people. You know, Aubrey and Saree have to approach it one way versus Brad and others have approach it the other way. It seems like in this second episode, maybe a big incentive for Zeke is he gave a quote, let me see if I can find it, about essentially like Saree and Aubrey are players and like Brad and Sierra aren't really threats, are they? Like, they're not actual people that are gonna go on and win. So like, Brad Culpepper surely is never gonna win Survivor. Tom, we'll donate it all to charity if Brad Culpepper wins Survivor.
Yeah,
so I definitely think that could play a role. Like, Sierra also gave a quote later about Zeke saying, it seems to me like he just thinks I'm dumb. Like, I think we could see all of those people feeling great about, like, of course I want to go to the end game. Like, Brad saying, of course I want to sit next to Sierra. And Sierra saying, of course I want to sit next to Brad.
And the issue is, if you have six Brads and you have five Saree's, and 6 into 11 goes the way you want it to, it turns out. And it's, you know, it's like at some point the numbers become more threatening than the individual qualities of those people. And I feel like we're reaching that point because, like, between them, Saree, Andrea, and Aubrey and Zeke are a formidable group, right? But they, if they just don't have the votes, then numerically there's just nothing they can do, and there's no getting past that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that that's like a, you know, a pornographic level alliance for a lot of people is having them together. But it's so scary when you know, there are seven other people in the game that are probably, if you had most people go through the entire cast list, this is like the vast majority of this alliance would be comprised of the people that would be like the last few in for a lot of people on this cast.
Yeah, I was talking to someone on Twitter saying that that group of Brad, Ty, Troy, Debbie, and Sierra, I think those are five of the six or seven people that I was least excited to see back in the entire cast, and now they've come together to form this blob that's just engulfing everything that comes before them.
Yeah, but what are you going to do about that? I guess, and incidentally, just quick, as we're talking about like this Brad and Sierra group, have you been noticing, maybe I'm the only one seeing this, Sierra Dawn Thomas looking Spradlin-esque, as in physically looks like Kim Spradlin, right?
And you could argue, I don't know if you should, but you could, playing in a Spradlin-esque fashion too, because so Ciri identifies Sierra as the godfather, as the first link in that chain. So if you take, so Sierra's linked to Brad, Brad's linked to Troy, and it goes down the line. And if you take out Sierra, supposedly the whole thing will crumble and collapse. Do you, so is that realistic? And if so, is it reassuring that Sierra somehow is the mastermind, the puppeteer that everything is going through?
I definitely think it's within the realm of, like, I think Ciri knows the state of the game better than, you know, pretty much anyone else who's ever played Survivor. I feel like Ciri is going to be on top of, like, how the actual dynamics are playing out. So I am definitely inclined to believe that Sierra is out there kind of being the ringleader. Like, we see her in this episode, even though it doesn't go her way, she clearly views herself as the sheriff. She says, hey, there's a new sheriff in town, right, when Ciri comes over and says, hey, I think we should switch to Haley.
And really hard to second guess Ciri on her read about what's going on. And it would, and it's possible that Sierra is actually playing this dominant game that all of us should be like bowing down and recognizing. And it's, and that's going to become more and more clear over time. It's interesting though, because we're so, like pre-configured to think of Brad as the obvious leader, and Brad, they're certainly doing enough to big him up as being in that role. Like, he, we're meant to think that Brad is this amazing guy, amazing player, and we're meant to think of Sierra as his psychic, who's just this extra vote, who's there for the ride. But maybe she's the one who's actually everything is going through, and that's kind of a scary thought, to be honest.
Yeah, for a second I thought you said psychic rather than sidekick.
That works too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think if I'm trying to find the timeline where what would Monica do, be a losing finalist, maybe Brad's the losing finalist, I feel like Sierra would be the overwhelming favorite for me to be the one who beats him in the timelines where he loses. Like, I would probably say that I would think Sarah Lucina has a better chance than Sierra at winning in general, but I have a hard time seeing how that's over Brad at this point, whereas Sierra I could easily see being over Brad.
I could also see, though, Ciri being a very influential juror. So if she, right now, I don't know how many people agree with that assessment that Sierra's the one who's really in charge. But if Ciri is on the jury early and she's getting in people's heads that that's the case, then by the time they get to the final three, everyone could already think that coming in. And maybe Sierra's the secret, the puppet master that everyone needs to acknowledge. And Brad is just like this kindly old rich guy who goes antiquing and really loves his wife, but we don't want to give him $1 million. And you can start to piece it together for how that might happen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see that coming in. So let's quickly touch on the challenges this week. The first immunity challenge was the block on head, balance on the post challenge. And this, by the way, this was a good week to be 5'2", 120 pounds when it comes to these immunity challenges. It seemed like Ty and Andrea both in there. Andrea was the third party for a long time in there with Ty and Ozzy on the balance, on the, not the balance beam, but the big pole that you have to hold yourself on. And then in the first one, she managed to outlast Ty. It came down to the two of them standing with the block on their head, and she won this first necklace. So good job, Andrea. Off to a good start here in the individual portion. Probably, I would imagine it's got to feel, for someone like Andrea, who is generally a notoriously like paranoid Survivor player, I can't imagine how valuable the necklace must just always feel for them to know that it can't be them.
Absolutely. Can we talk about that pole challenge though? Because so Andrea takes this hard fall, which anyone else, literally anyone else, that's you're at risk of serious damage, breaking bones, whatever. Andrea just shrugs it off like she's a cat or something and just scampers back off to the bench.
But, well, no, she goes, yeah, I didn't want to slide down. She said like she did it on purpose. Like she said, like,
right,
I didn't want to slide down
off
the pole. Yeah.
Right. But so if you're not Andrea and you're not just invincible, then is there a reason to just be higher up on the pole than you need to be? Because I've been puzzled by this every time they run the challenge.
Well, I would imagine that the reason is, even if I slip a little bit, there are at least footholds below me that I could then grab back onto and be okay and regain my footing if I'm all the way at the top.
Yeah, but you can be 2 or 3 footholds up. You don't need to be right at the top of the pole, so that if you slip somehow, you're risking mortal injury or something if you fall off.
Well, do you see some kind of like hack? Like, is there some reason other than not wanting to get injured that you think there would be an advantage in starting lower? Because it really seems like the benefits of being up high pretty vastly outweigh the safety factor.
Well, I feel like not wanting to get pointlessly injured is enough for me, but maybe I have low standards. I don't know.
Well, I definitely see what you're saying. If it's like, if you're whoever up there, if you're Troyzan up there, you're never going to win this challenge. If you're Brad Culpepper, you just weigh too much to win this challenge. Then I could definitely see why even risk going up to the top, just hang out in the middle. But for me, at least, if I show up on Survivor and this is the challenge, like, I'm doing a nice controlled slide down the beam, like 30 seconds in, like, I know I'm never winning this. Let's just get down safely.
I think I'm staying up for just enough time for it to not be embarrassing, assuming I have that choice, and then making a graceful exit from the stage. But I guess I'm not seeing
what
the
benefit. No, I just solved it. This is going to tie in something that we talked about, or have talked about many times. Dom, what better chance to fake your injury that you want for the course of the season than by falling off of this pole? I have definitely said, fake the injury. Like, Tyson got tremendously, he got lucky to get injured, and then he did a great job of playing it up. There is so much value in people thinking you can't win a challenge, I would say, until you need to turn it on and win a challenge.
That's actually kind of ingenious, because if it's the first challenge where you're just standing there with a block on your head, you have to work hard to get injured doing that. But it's very easy, because of what I just said, to somehow like suffer some horrible injury.
Plus, easier to kind of like hurt, self-inflicted wound your foot to make it look worse than it is, like Indian burn your foot for a while to like get it swollen.
Oh, of course. But that's the thing. I don't get what those benefits are that you alluded to of being higher up on the pole. Like, isn't it just strictly worse than being slightly lower down?
No, because you at least have chances to regain your footing if you slip a little bit.
No, but what you see is not, like, people going 1 or 2 foot holds up. They go, like, right up until the top and then just go 1 foot hold down. So they're still all the same downsides, but none of the upsides.
I know what you're saying, which is it's rare that people gradually slip down the footholds and then stay there for a while and then slip down a little more and stay there for a while.
Right. And if you start slipping, you're already done. You're not winning that challenge if you slip. Like, you see Ty just unbroken concentration, just never in question that he's going to stay up there. Ozzy, until the very end, just seemed effortless for him. If you're slipping like halfway through, you're done. Just make sure your exit is as on your own terms, I guess.
Okay, I will concede half of the point. I would say I will definitely concede that if you are not a contender to win the challenge, don't go high up. But if you are a contender to win the challenge, I think definitely do go high up.
So that's going to do it for the challenges. I think there's not much more to say about those, except shout out to Marshalls for their continued good quality products and service as always. And we get back to camp.
Do you know what Marshalls is?
I do now. Yeah, because of their amazing advertising and branding, of course. But we get back to camp, and Zeke is thrilled that Andrea didn't win immunity because she now is his main target for reasons which are still unbeknownst to me. Do you have any insight on this?
No, this is what I was saying earlier about it really seemed like for basically all the way up to this point in the season, Zeke and Andrea had always been on the same team, and more to the point, always been on the same page. They haven't been to that many votes, but when they have, it seems like they've been tight and been working together. Along with Sari, it seemed like fit right back in with them, and they seemed to be like a really exciting trio that was emerging within the game, and I was so happy to see that they were all on the right side of the merge vote. That's great news. And then this came completely out of nowhere. This is what goes back to what I was saying earlier about I feel like maybe for Zeke he just feels like the Brad Culpeppers and Sierra Don Thomases of the world are just such non-candidates to win Survivor that he has to win by default if it's just him and them.
Maybe it's the same attitude that Sarah had of like, do I want to go up against the Brad side or do I want to go up against the Sari side? And this is like, if you think long term you're going to have to go against them eventually, then why not do it now before they see it coming, right?
Yeah.
I think for Sarah, that makes more sense because she has more options, and that's because her social game is phenomenal.
You nailed it. That was perfect. That was better than I could do.
But Sarah, I think, like, she genuinely does seem to be more connected to like the Debbies, and we saw that. I think that scene with Troy from like 3 episodes ago is going to come into play later on. Right, yeah. Where if Sarah sticks with them and now suddenly Troy is on the outs or something, or Troy gives Sarah his idol, or something is going to happen there, I'm sure, that will bring that to fruition. Whereas Zeke, I think, is just floundering around, and he understands he is this unknown quantity. He comes across as this schemer, and he his reputation does not precede him, but he certainly has, he knows how he comes across, and so he's going to be playing the game pretty hard, and he's going to latch onto whatever he thinks is the best move for him. I just don't know that this is the best move, though. I think he couldn't predict that this is what's going to happen, where like Ozzy gets blindsided over him somehow, but it feels like there are lots of ways this could go wrong, and this was just one of them.
It seems like at the first vote after the merge, Zeke and company decided, well, instead of going after someone from the opposing alliance, we'll go from someone after the middle, and then someone in the middle. And then at the second vote, they decided, instead of going after the opposing alliance, we'll go after each other.
Right. So we end up with Zeke targeting Andrea. Andrea then targeting Zeke, and above all of this, they decide, well, those who can go at it, we're just going to target Ozzy, because why not? He's the biggest challenge threat left in the game by far. And so they've just completely routed the opposing side without them even really having to do anything. They just did it to themselves.
It's like one of the most astounding positions that I would imagine people have ever shown up in. And I think Steven gave a confessional about this at the Token Sheens merge, when he was like, oh my god, we're down so big in the numbers that I thought we had so much work to do, and people can't stop coming up to us trying to sell out their majority teammates. Like, this has got to be remarkable if you're in that, like, Brad and Sierra group of, okay, we have what seem to be the numbers, but we have so many heavy hitters on this other side, we have so much to be worried about, and then they just start attacking each other. That's like, that's a freebie.
Yeah. And Zeke had three, I believe, secret scenes this week, and his were by far the longest and the most detailed of anyone's that I saw. And his take on the game was that he had this, quote, indestructibly tight alliance with Sarah, which we'll come back to in a second. He said he was very close with Ozzy, and Ozzy is linked to Brad and Sierra, so that was his in with the other side. And he was tight with Debbie, but he said Andrea will turn on him in a heartbeat. So it seemed like even before this, even back on the previous Nuku tribe, he did not trust Andrea to be any kind of long-term player for him. So that's really interesting. And it comes back to, I really wonder what the status of that was coming out of Survivor Brooklyn, which I didn't finish because I was too busy watching Survivor Maryland. Shout out to Austin Trupp. But I got the sense the two of them, they knew each other coming in. Maybe they were kind of friends, acquaintances. They at least recognized each other. And in Survivor, that gets your foot in the door. But it seems like Zeke already had his mind set early that, like, I cannot trust Andrea if it comes down to it. Like, I need to make this move against her first. And so,
but
I,
it's weird
that,
because it always goes so well for her friends from Brooklyn when they're on the same team together. So right. I don't get that at all.
But I wonder if that's based on anything that happened in Survivor Brooklyn, or if it's just a general perception of Andrea that we've mentioned, everyone else has mentioned too, of just she comes across as so paranoid and shifty.
From what I have heard, I also have not watched Survivor Brooklyn, but I have heard that they were on fine enough terms after Survivor Brooklyn. But yeah, I am also with you that it seems to me like this is something that is, to go back to your like buy on comparison of, this got left on the editing floor. There were just simply not enough time to show off what was going on at that original Nuku. I would imagine that Zeke was giving confessionals since the very beginning about how he would love to work with these people for a while, but knows that the time is going to eventually come that he has to turn on them. And maybe he views this as like moving time. Like, I need to get my noose. We hear him frame it several times. It's like soldiers lining up for an army. I think he may be thinking, I need a new army now. I need to start taking out the people who are my actual, like, other air quotes, like, winner candidates, if idiots are auction drafting this before the season starts.
But I bring this up because of Andrea's reaction. So this is someone so she got blindsided with an idol in her pocket when she was in a decent shape to win the game by people that she was very close to within her own alliance, and she took it with more grace than the vast majority of people could reasonably be expected to. And then she comes in here and one vote doesn't go her way, and she's saying, that's a terrible game move, you suck at this game, I hope I see you never, which is an iconic quote, by the way, and one which I plan to use in a wide variety of strange and inappropriate contexts. But it's weird that she would say that with such kind of personal venom behind it when she's been so magnanimous in her other seasons.
Yeah, sorry, that's a really, really interesting point. To go back to, you're totally right. In Cara Moen, it really seemed like she blamed herself. She was like, wow, this, I really screwed up here, for the, at least from what I saw. Whereas this was, the vote didn't even go, not go her way. She just heard that Zeke was targeting her.
And that was her getting voted out. And this time, she's still in the game. It's just one vote didn't go away, one person lied to her. But it seemed like this was much more of a personal betrayal in this case.
Well, and the other thing that stands out to me is, you know, fuming and saying, you know, you suck, I hope I see you never, really seems to me like something that you would say when you think that that person's about to leave, not something that you think that you say when you're about to go back to camp with them.
Right, and of course he's not saying it to his face. But
no, I know, confessional, yeah.
But based on the preview, it seemed like she says about as much to his face in the next episode. So, yeah, it seemed like she thought Zeke was going home, and this was the send-off that she wanted to give him, which to me suggests that this is more than just one person voting out another person in the game of Survivor. This is... she felt like something had actually been severed there.
Well, no, I mean, I think maybe they had a great relationship potentially coming out of Survivor Brooklyn and through for the first however many rounds of the game, and that's why she was so upset when she heard that in her mind he was for no reason trying to turn the game on her when, like, they'd been a tight group of, you know, they'd been in this tight group of allies and voted together at the merge. I could easily see it being because she was so shocked that Zeke, for seemingly no real reason, wanted to turn things around on her. I could definitely see that being the case, that she was just so devastated.
Yeah, let's try and go inside Zeke's head for a moment. So what do you think the plan is for him now moving ahead? Is he going to just stick with the Brad group and with this idea that we floated for Sarah of just this is weaker competition, I'm going to stick with them and try and outmaneuver them later? Or is it I'm going to keep hopping back and forth as I see fit, just eliminating the people that I don't think I want to work with?
I could see him, like, what option does he have, I would say, at this point, other than going to that other group? It seems like he could actually be in a decent spot to make a good pitch for why they might want to keep him around after his original alliance had ended up turning on him. Like, maybe he'll be, like, the new Penner, where no one wants to work with him now at this point. But I could actually see a lot of compelling reasons why, at least if I was Sierra and Brad in that group, that I would want to leave Zeke in. It seems like everyone else in the game is not willing to trust him ever again. Why would I vote him out now?
And I guess also he can bank on being one of the last people left because everyone else on the other side is such a threat. So it's not like there's any cipher where it's Zeke versus X, obviously we're going to vote out Zeke because it's going to be Zeke versus Andrea or Zeke versus Suri or Ozzy as he saw it because he didn't think they were voting out Ozzy or and so on. So it's not, so he can expect to be the one person left at the end at like the final seven where maybe he can then flip things around and make something happen.
Right, that's exactly what I would be hoping for, honestly, in Zeke's spot. Like you said earlier, I think he recognized long before this vote even happened, I would imagine, that he had substantially screwed up and it was in a really desperate position.
Right, and it seems so transparent, too. And Sierra basically called him out for it, saying, whenever I talk to Zeke, I feel like he thinks I'm stupid. And I think that's a general impression that people get, of like, Zeke is so... And even Debbie, and you know if Debbie's calling you out on your... on your lack of subtlety, that something has gone badly wrong. But like everyone seems to be pining on Zeke. And so I think the impression that we're meant to come away with is Zeke is someone who has these big ideas but can't really follow through on them in the way that he would need to.
Yeah. To kind of switch the conversation, just because I still am really curious about it, and just to start looking, I guess, a little bit ahead at where the strategy might go now that we don't have Ozzy in there anymore, controlling every aspect of the strategy as he always does, Dom. I am really just fascinated about where Sarah Lucina is going to fit into all of this. I know we talked about this with Michaela, just seems like she's got to be in there for a while and in there to do something big, but I really can't figure out what that's going to be for Sarah Lucina. Like, I feel like we just are seeing too much of her and too much good stuff from her and too much about where she thinks she stands, but I'm also feeling like, are we seeing much about what other people think about Sarah?
I can't, off the top of my head, I can't recall a single instance of someone saying, like, okay, Sarah and I are airtight. I mean, maybe Andrea or Suri at some point, but she's not in the forefront of people's minds in that same way.
Right, whereas I feel like we're seeing every single episode several people talking about how much they like Brad Culpepper.
it's queuing up to see who can whose turn it is to gush over how much they love Brad. Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess along similar lines, while I'm thinking about it, what do we hear people say about Sierra Dawn Thomas, other than Zeke saying that she's not really a player in the game? Or Sari saying that she thinks she's running the show, but actually I'm going to flip things on her. Like, are we hearing really anyone say great things about anyone other than Brad Culpepper?
Yeah, it feels like there's just a general lack of people talking about other people, except the immediate boot targets, right?
Yeah. I guess people are saying about Sari, like, I love her, but she's such a good player that I can't work with her.
But even that is a very recent thing, because we saw it come up early in the season and then again this episode. But in between, no one was talking about Sari. And the same goes even for someone like Andrea. Like, who was saying anything about Andrea, really, except for Zeke, because it was immediately relevant?
Yeah. I don't know. I would imagine that this is probably going to be, in retrospect, the episode that when we get to finally hear from people, like after the season is all over, I am imagining that this is going to be one where there is just way more than they ever could have possibly shown yeah. in the amount of time that they had.
I really hope so, because I don't want it to be so simple that it just reduces to there is a big alliance and a small alliance, and we all know how this is going to end.
Yeah. So I guess let's get into this just second tribal council here. Ozzy is not immune, even after being up on the poll for a really long time. By the way, he was undefeated. He'd won this challenge twice. Jeff Probst reminded us of that like three or four times. Do you think Ozzy was like mad? Because I could see Ozzy being the type who like took pride in Jeff saying it over and over and like really boosted his own confidence in the challenge going forward. Like, it was helpful to hear it over and over.
I don't know if he was mad at the moment. I think he might have been a little bit miffed at hashtag dethroned flashing up on the screen. To the extent that Ozzy gets mad about anything, because Ozzy has this weird like duality to his personality where he's kind of arrogant and kind of takes things really personally, but at the same time does seem pretty chill. So I don't know. It's always hard to judge exactly how he's feeling at any given time.
Yeah, I swear everything I hear about people who like hang out with Ozzy in real life is like, oh yeah, he's a totally laid back, nice dude. But I do think when he's out there in Survivor, especially Ozzy the returnee, after he was such a big fan favorite his first time, and was viewed as like such an iconic player and such a great provider, I definitely think when he's out there playing Survivor, he may have a bit of a big head about him from time to time.
I think he does buy into his own mythology. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess let's just get into, is there any idea to not be voting out? Like, we see Debbie go on the real offensive here for Ozzy, but is this something that you think maybe this was more foregone than the show even made it look? Like, we have the whole Zeke and Andrea saga playing out on one end, but then when Debbie swoops in here, I could see it being the case that maybe as all of that was going on, everyone was still saying, kind of under their breath, like, you know, this may not be the worst time to take out Ozzy. He's always going to be at the forefront of people's minds when it comes to like who could possibly run the table in challenges.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine it being so obvious that everyone wants Ozzy out, but Debbie has to be the one swooping in to take credit for it. But it did seem though like she was just announcing it to people. There's no discussion involved. It was just, okay, we're taking out Ozzy, and they just went along with it and it was done.
Yeah.
And it felt like it wasn't Debbie saying, I want to vote out Ozzy and I'm insisting this is going to happen. It's everyone agrees we need to vote out Ozzy, because of course they do. Why wouldn't you? And so I think when, like we saw with Sarah, like Debbie comes up to Sarah and whispers, okay, we're voting out Ozzy. And I think Sarah assumed, well, okay, I'm sure like Sierra and Brad and Troy and Ty are on board with that. And this has been discussed. It's not just Debbie unilaterally going berserk. And it's very effective, right? Like, if you just present this as a fait accompli and just go and announce it to people, they just assume that, of course, everyone's on board. And so by the time anyone compares notes, everyone is on board already. So it's true. And then it's like a self-fulfilling thing, right? Like, you just announce it and it becomes reality.
How many different times did we see Russell Hance do this, particularly at the beginning of Samoa, where he just told everyone, this is what everyone else is saying. We're all in on this vote. And then everyone gradually got the word, hey, yeah, I guess that's what we're all doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess
and they were saying it. Yeah.
Right. And I guess my real question though is, is this a spot where Ozzy, if he had been on season 33 and he was an unknown that people didn't know could rattle off 10 challenges in a row on Redemption Island, is it so easy to just turn the vote on him, or do we see more of this Zeke and Andrea dynamic play out? Because I do wonder how much of this was reputation. It really seems like, you know, it's impossible to ignore. If you just look at the boot list for who's getting voted out this season, it really seems like reputation is an overwhelming factor.
Well, at the point at which Zeke and Andrea are going at it like that, why would you vote either one of them out? I just let them get sidetracked by that. And if the one thing that can overturn your plans is everyone else banding together, then just leave these two people in the game who just can't work together anymore and vote out someone else instead. And I can imagine if it wasn't Ozzy, if Ozzy was this unknown quantity, maybe it's Suri, who is this four-time player that everyone is terrified of, who somehow escaped both of the votes this week and who probably will not escape the votes for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that being the case. If it is going to come down to Debbie spreads whoever the biggest consensus target is at the last minute, maybe that is Suri if Ozzy is the unknown person.
I'm actually kind of shocked that when they tell Zeke that the decoy vote is Aubrey, that Debbie just doesn't leap on board with that and say, all right, we're ready, Aubrey. Brilliant, let's go. I wonder, though, how much of the... Because we saw these two hinky votes of Suri voting for Sierra and then Zeke voting for Aubrey. I think for Zeke, it was just a case of, like, we don't trust Zeke either, so we're not going to tell him what's going on.
We're voting for him, so what are we going to do? Oh, the Brad people?
Even the people who were voting out Ozzy. And then for Suri, like, she said, as she voted, this is just to spice things up a little bit. I don't know what she meant by that. Like, maybe she thought Zeke was a done deal, and so I'm going to cast a vote for Sierra to, like, make her paranoid going ahead. That I can, like, pin on someone else or something.
Yeah, well, one weird thing in this week's segment of Colin Reads Too Much Into Very Small Things is it really, if you look at that vote for Sierra, it seemed to me like she really tried to disguise her handwriting and not, it's in very, I don't even know how to describe it. Just, like, try to find a screenshot of that vote for Sierra. It's in very weird penmanship.
Interesting. I wonder, too, if it's trying to avoid, like, the possibility of a tie. Because if you think, like, I don't know which verse they thought were going towards Zeke, but let's say it's like, well, then I guess who do they think Zeke is voting for, right? Like, I don't even know. But you can imagine if it's like 5-5-1-1 somehow, and then everything goes to rocks and it's messed up. Whereas this way, you can who knows? But
yeah, I loved having the first four votes come in for four different people. That's like Borneo-esque. That's incredible stuff. It's rare. I remember in the last couple of years that's happened before. Like, we got four different votes. I could not begin to tell you when it was, but somewhat recently that's happened. But those votes are so few and far between these days.
That's going to be my trivia question for you next week, so get studying.
I guess tweet at us when the last time four different people got votes at a tribal council was.
Yeah, it did seem, though, so when Debbie was making the rounds to just tell people what was going on, she goes up to Sarah and just seems to be assuming implicitly, okay, Sarah is with us, Sarah is on board. So maybe, because we've been assuming because Sarah had just been on a tribe with Ozzy and Andrea and Suri that those were her people. But maybe the whole time Sarah was closer to the Brad group and this is just her doing what she was planning to do the whole time.
Maybe it was that bond with Troyzan that we saw. Maybe Troyzan's the real mastermind here, Dom. He pulled Sarah in and that was the decisive vote. I feel like we may hear that version of the story someday.
You think Troyzan was the top link of the chain as God intended?
Yeah. That would be my theory. Yeah. That's my theory at this point. It does seem low, like, if we are going to get Brad and Sierra, Don Thomas and Michaela and Sarah Lucina all deep in the same endgame, I would guess that they have to soon start latching on to that, like, Brad coalition.
Yeah. One thing I really liked from the episode is it seemed like Ozzy and Suri were just on great terms again. And there was no question of, like, Ozzy wanting to vote out Suri or Suri feeling guarded around Ozzy. It seemed like both of them generally were really comfortable with each other and wanted to work together.
Well, I think Suri genuinely did say before the season started, like, I don't have anything against Ozzy. Like, I'm totally willing to let bygones be bygones, but I don't know that about Ozzy. And it seems like she did whatever it took to get Ozzy on the same page with that. Like, especially given what we saw From the first couple of days, like at least in that discussion he had with Ty, he still had some reservations. Although maybe a big piece of this comes down to I remember in one of the early episodes, as he was at the original Nuku talking about his previous relationship with Suri, in his mind, the way that Fans versus Favorites played out is Suri basically did everything I wanted up until the very end there for me. So like she's totally cool.
It was Parvati, that Black Widow, the whole time.
Right,
all
so like maybe there wasn't as much of a rift as maybe people would have thought there was.
And I'm sure Suri was thankful that Ozzy had had that kind of interpretation of events, even if it gave her slightly less credit than she was due.
Yeah.
I guess the final thing about this, though, is Debbie, I want to say, wasting her extra vote, and it didn't end up mattering. First of all, do you think it was rational for her to play it based on where she thought the votes were going? And then secondly, is there actually a benefit to playing it anyway? Because if you think you're not going to need it, I saw Steven make this argument that by doing this, she cements this as her move, even though in reality it didn't change anything. Like when people think about this vote, they all think, okay, Debbie was the one going around telling people to vote for Ozzy, and she was willing to go far enough that she would give up her own special advantage in order to make this work. And that's a big blindside, right? This is a big move in the game. So if Debbie gets to the end, this is something that she can point to and say, okay, this was all me. And
First of all, is it that big of a blindside to take Ozzy out when he doesn't have the necklace when it's like early now?
No, but that's how people see it. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, I definitely do see what you're saying, where it seems like Debbie did do a very good job. It seems like certainly the show gave her credit for being the one to make this happen, and I think Steven could definitely be right that she is viewed later on, and maybe we go on to see her argue in an end game later on, or like at a final tribal council. This could be like her big selling point, and maybe we'll even see, if she is there, Ozzy get her vote. Like we've always talked about, Ozzy is potentially the kind of juror who wants to give it to the person that he views as like the giant killer.
I think Debbie winning is what I'm rooting for from the season now.
I think I misspoke. Get his jury vote. Her getting his vote. Sorry.
I think people understood what you meant. But so the one outcome that I'm hoping for from the season now is Debbie somehow winning. Because that would be, if Cochran can win another season by proxy, I think he truly is. He is the king. The king will stay king. I would love for Suri to win, obviously. I would love for Aubrey to win, love for Andrew to win. I know it's not going to happen, right? I'm not going to let myself get my hopes up. However, Debbie winning is just crazy enough and yet just realistic enough that I can try and like trick myself into thinking it could work. So that's I'm all in on Debbie now. That's my official stance.
Interesting. I mean, even when we saw the whole showdown with Brad where she was freaking out on him, and simultaneously every single episode is...
She came across perfect in that. Okay. That was Brad being a dick. I will not hear anything to the contrary.
Okay, fair. I don't know. I would definitely say give me Suri for sure over Debbie. And I would definitely still probably be taking both Aubrey and Andrea, even as relatively little as we have seen of them compared to Debbie. I feel like what we have seen of Debbie is not winner material, although definitely the edit has not been, the edit has not been as reliable as it had been in years past recently. So I suppose, I'm not even going to say stranger things have happened than that. Stranger things have not happened than Debbie Wanner winning Survivor.
Well, look, for when your hopes get crushed, I will save a seat for you on the Debbie train. You're welcome to join me.
Okay, fair. I guess let's offer quickly some parting thoughts here on Ozzy. Now, the third or fourth four-time player of Survivor, I guess he and Suri are jointly the third and fourth. What do we make of Ozzy's like just overall legacy now? Has anything really changed for you? Because it really seems to me like this is more of the same Ozzy.
Yeah, I don't know what would have to happen. I don't know how he would need to change, from my opinion, to change. Because I think you could bring Ozzy back another 30 times, and every single time he get voted out, he'll say, "Well, good luck eating now, guys." That's just how he thinks. That's how he plays the game. And if you're an Ozzy fan, that's what you love about him. That's the qualities that you like are not going to change or go away. I guess if he's like 50 or something, he's not going to be great in challenges anymore. So that's might be an issue. But
why?
I don't know. Well, I don't know what people like Ozzy. I'm just projecting, I suppose.
I mean, Terry Deeds was like a monster in the challenges when he was 50. I can easily see Ozzy being a challenge beast when he's 50.
Okay, but Ozzy's like 70 then. He's in Joe Del Campo territory. I don't know. Ozzy, you see why they bring him back? It feels weird to say that he he was a waste of like a fourth timer slot. But it's just like, this is what you get from Ozzy. And if you bring him back a fifth time, you'll get something like this from Ozzy again. And it's so, like, Ozzy being the person who has played the most days of Survivor, it feels very appropriate, but at the same time, those days just, they don't seem to mean anything at this point. It's just, Ozzy is out there. Okay, but what is he even doing?
But, I mean, Ozzy is there being just an eternal reminder of why being great in challenges will help you get to the merge quite often, and why being great in challenges will get you voted out very shortly thereafter quite often. It seems like that's just going to be his trajectory every single time that he ended up returning. Like, I know his first time, he ended up making it all the way to the end, and under, like, remark, it was a great comeback, the I-2-4 against the Raro, I remember, against that giant group. But I really feel like Ozzy the Returnee was just going to be too much of a known quantity, and now certainly, when he is the all-time leader in Survivor days played, I don't even know if 50-year-old Ozzy would be any different than the Ozzy of 10 years ago or the Ozzy of today.
Yeah, I wonder as well, because so Ozzy in his first time understandably had a lot of fans, and then he comes so close to winning in South Pacific after this amazing run through the season. I wonder though if that's like the top of the range for Ozzy, and how often he's just going to be exactly like he was this season, where he's there and he's kind of interesting and you kind of root for him, but when he leaves it's not any great surprise or even that tragic at all. Unless you're on the Survivor Facebook fan page, in which case it's the worst thing that's ever happened again.
Well, along those lines, like, I tweeted this out. I follow the CBS Survivor Twitter account for some reason, and they tweeted out a picture of someone on the pole with the caption of, like, oh my god, hasn't this season been, you know, the pole in the immunity challenge, like, oh, this season's been so crazy, like, this is how on the edge of their seat all the fans are during all these votes. And I just clicked to, like, expand the thing for a second, and I swear to you, the top, like, 10 tweet replies were all, this show sucks, everyone's terrible, Ozzy needs to come back immediately, I love Ozzy, like, all of these different Ozzy, pro-Ozzy tweets. Every single one of the top replies had nothing to do with the tweet itself and was purely about how desperately we need Ozzy back immediately, and they all had like 15 favorites. It was crazy to think about just how different, I'm sure, the fan kind of community response is for the people who are constantly seeing all of the Facebook commenters and tweet people, Twitter people, twerps? I don't know. What's the vernacular for...
I don't even know any. I'm not up with the kids nowadays. I don't know the lingo. So, yeah, I believe the word is still tweet. Someone tweet at me to let me know what the right term is.
Well, point being, it seems like Ozzy still very much has an incredibly devoted fan base to such an extent that whenever Rupert comes back for whatever that Legends season ends up being, it would not surprise me at all if Ozzy is there too, because clearly you're not going to have to be a winner to be on that. And so I think Ozzy could easily be there.
By now, all he has to do is just be on screen. Nothing he does will change people's opinion of him. Like, his fan base will be, they will be hardcore Ozzy fans for the rest of their days. So as long as Ozzy is just physically there, like, you could have a still shot of Ozzy and people would go gaga over it. So he doesn't have to work for it. He can just do whatever he wants. It's fine.
Yeah, no, several of those tweets that I mentioned were like, oh my god, I hope they literally starve now that Ozzy's gone. Like, I can't believe that they would be so audacious as to vote out Ozzy. And actually, an hour ago, I got a tweet sent at me from Gregory McBean saying, my two casual parents are still pissed off about Ozzy leaving. They say they hope the other contestants all starve. So it seems like a pretty popular consensus, even among, like, parents who are watching this show. So that will definitely be fun to see. Maybe they will starve. Like, I guess I brought it up already, like, I could easily see this being some kind of, like, food related storyline, although maybe it's just because they wanted to pay service to Ozzy, as they always do every season he's on, about what a great provider he is. All right, so Dom, I guess any other calls about just where the game is gonna go from here? It really seems to me like Zeke may be on the hot seat pretty soon here.
Yeah, I think we have officially entered the darkest timeline. We could have had what you described as a pornographic alliance between, like, Ceri and Zeke and Andrew and Aubrey. Instead, this is what Zeke has consigned us to, okay? It's going to be take your pick of Troy and Ty and Debbie and Sierra and Brad going to the end and it's all going to be kumbaya and nothing's going to be fun. And it's this is what Zeke is concerned with. So blame Zeke. Don't tweet hateful things at him, but reserve some hate in your heart for Zeke for consigning us to this misery.
All right. I don't know. I feel like it's at least conceivable still for me that Zeke can turn this around to some extent. I think he is at least coming across, like, maybe I'm just someone who, the same way I feel, and I've brought this up on previous podcasts, the same way I feel about Suri, where, like, whatever they say, I'm just, like, drawn to and find really insightful, the same way that whatever Ozzy says, the CBS casuals find that to be, like, the most exciting stuff in the world. Maybe I'm just, like, so predisposed to generally liking Zeke that I'm just seeing what I want to see here, but I do feel like Zeke could turn his position around and stay in the game for a while, although I'm starting to feel less and less like that might be a win after this week.
Yeah, I like Zeke, just his affect and what he brings to the table, and I don't see that changing unless he changes somehow. It's just I can't endorse what he's setting this up for. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Suri and Aubrey are probably also going to just, I'm going to enter every episode, I guess, fearing that that's finally, of course, going to be the end of the line for them. And I feel like several weeks out of these next few, those fears could finally be realized. I think that's going to be something we have to look out for. Although, like, people have been saying, if there are people who can get out of these kind of positions, like Suri and Aubrey are, like, historically great players and capable of potentially doing that.
Yeah, I just think it's such a high mountain to overcome, though. Like,
right.
And it's not... So I think you put them pound for pound against anyone on the other side and they come out ahead, but it's one of them against five people on the other side, and it's just such a narrow route to get out of this. It's, yeah.
Right. And who would ever choose to say, oh, I could go with Brad Culpepper and Debbie, who both seem to trust me for the last, you know, 20 days or so, or I could switch things up and go with Suri, who has no real reason to be loyal to me at all and is clearly just desperate.
And it's also going to crush me in the end if somehow, like, we both make it there together. Like, yeah. And that's the thing, because maybe this is too pessimistic. Maybe there is hope that alliance will fall apart and the game will become crazy again and things will get mixed up. But I think it generally does make sense for all of those people to stick together. And I think they recognize that. And they, for however much I describe them as the B team and for however little respect they get from the fan base, they're smart enough to recognize that. They know that their interests are best served by going to the end against other people from that same group. So, yeah, it doesn't look good. And again, even if they come up with some amazing plan, there are three idols there. I don't know how you're going to get past that. Maybe you pull off some, like, Houdini-esque maneuver for one vote, but long term, you can't get through just this wall of idols, and you would need an idol yourself to make a lot of this stuff happen. You can't get one because they're all being hoarded by Ty and Troy. So it's, yeah.
Well, maybe we're not talking enough about Ty. Where if this game is going to get turned around, maybe it's him who's doing it. Like, he's definitely getting a ton of visibility. We're seeing him. He has those two idols in his pocket, and he's obviously a player who is pretty impulsive and willing to let idols fly if he feels like the timing might be right. I definitely feel like Ty could be potentially one of the most interesting people as we enter kind of this endgame. But again, maybe that's just wishful thinking. Maybe he's going to get blindsided next week with both idols in his pocket or whatever.
I would be down with that. I think Ty could easily mix things up or mess things up, however you want to portray it. But I don't know if that's going to be Ty flips over and leads to resistance. I think it's going to be more Ty gets paranoid, or they try to take a shot at Ty, but they miss. And then it's going to be, when can we afford to, like, rebound a vote onto Ty somehow? Ty's going to be relevant, but I don't know if it's going to be him actually doing anything, if that makes sense.
Do we still have any chickens kicking around this camp? Do we potentially have some Ty chicken drama coming down the line?
We saw one of them harassing Suri in this episode. They do still seem to be there. Not for much longer, though, I imagine, if Suri gets away about
it. So Ty has trained his attack chickens.
Yeah. That could be, like, Suri's one form of revenge. If voting people out doesn't work, it's like murdering the chickens.
Yeah.
But Stay tuned on that.
I think that's definitely what we're in for, Dom. Yeah. So I guess my big question for you, as we if we want to kind of look big picture, and I still feel like as I can't say often enough this season, I really feel like we have entered. A completely new like realm of the edit. I feel like after Millennials versus Gen X, I could never approach a season with as much confidence ever again as far as like who I think is really looking good and who I'm convinced has to be the winner. But let me ask you, are you taking Brad Culpepper or The Field at this point?
Firstly, if we're going to keep doing this, you need to rebuild your shattered ego at some point, because it's swung way too far in the other direction now. You just have no...
to be clear, I say this every single time, thrilled beyond belief that we are finally in that territory. Like, I love that I'm not coming in here saying, well, Michelle obviously has to win, sorry.
Yeah, okay. But so to answer your question, I think I do, because I would narrow it down to like Brad and Sarah and then an outside chance for a few other people. But Brad is getting up there for sure.
Yeah, I would say this is the week now after seeing the merge continue to be this solid for him. I would take Brad against The Field finally now, and I think Sarah is the overwhelming number two. I would still say Sari is in there for me. I think Ty is somehow in there a little bit, and I think Zeke is somehow in there a little bit, but I may just be getting pretty optimistic on those last two, that maybe there are more candidates than there realistically are.
I would love for Zeke to be in the mix still, but after this week where he reverted to being the survivor player that no one respected or trusted. And yeah, okay, I get that people said stuff about Adam, but it still counts for something. And I after the events of last week, I don't think they would go back to just being in normal survivor mode if they needed to, like, elevate Zeke long term. I just don't see that happening.
I don't know. I mean, I was about to flag up this time at the merge last season is when I definitively ruled out. I said, okay, that's right. That Adam can't win. And now I feel like Zeke was that person this week.
And maybe it's the same thing of like people were saying in this episode, if Zeke gets to the end, he wins because his story is just so great. And so you have to counterbalance that somehow because you know that he does get to the end, but. Let's just don't get your hopes up is all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, Dom, anything else that you wanted to be getting into this week?
I think we covered everything. Life is terrible. Everything's going to hell in the handcart, and the season is over. Just don't get excited about anything anymore.
All right. Always a treat to talk to you. You can be following me on Twitter at Colin Stone. You can be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. Email us, domandcolin@gmail.com. And you can also be finding us on iTunes, where you can be leaving us like ratings and reviews. And I don't really know what it goes towards, but it seems like it can't hurt. And I guess we would appreciate it.
Yeah, we don't know how to check our rating on iTunes, so we can't verify that you've done it. But just for our own peace of mind, just tell us that you have, and, you know, we'll be happy.
Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you very soon. And, Dom, I hope I see you never.